Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Nightlight. Step away from the mainstream and gather around as we enlighten the world and our realities and travel this cosmic journey we call life. Join us as we share with you and provide that beacon that can guide us all to a better way. Explore with us as we examine a metaphysical montage of spiritual insights, covering everything from the mundane to the magical, UFOs to unicorns, and everything in between. This is a time of awakening, of sharing and evolving, of spreading our wings and soaring on the cosmic breath of creation. Come and join with other light-minded spirits as we weave our lights together to seek understanding, enlightenment, and with a little luck, some wisdom. This is Nightlight, a reminder that you are never alone.
Welcome to Nightlight, everybody. Our thanks, first of all, to Ken Quiet Hawk for his amazing intro. Please check him out. He is a native storyteller and, along with his wife, have a tremendous career of preserving the history and the cosmology and the traditions of Native Americans in storytelling. And if you've never checked out this particular form of recording history, I suggest you find out about it because it is not only educational and entertaining, but insightful and spiritual as well. So check out Ken Quiet Hawk or Native Storytellers on Google, and you will find some amazing information there that will certainly, I think, inspire you to talk into your children and your friends about history, because the spoken word seems to have come before the written word, and perhaps it is a better way of preserving our history. I have with me today Doug Kenyon, and he has written an amazing book called Ghosts of Atlantis. And this is a subject that is near and dear to my heart. All of you who know me know that I have been hunting for Atlantis in not only in literature, but inside of myself, and trying to find just where this myth, this story, this history has seated itself inside not only me, but a lot of other people I know. Let me tell you a bit about this book. We live within the ruins of an ancient civilization whose vast size has rendered it invisible. Remembered in myth as Atlantis, Lemuria, or other lost world archetypes, the remains of this advanced civilization have lain buried it for millennia beneath the deserts and oceans of the world, leaving as many mysterious and inexplicable clues. Investigating the perennial myth of a forgotten fountainhead of civilization, Doug presents extensive physical and spiritual evidence of a lost great culture. The collective amnesia that wiped it from planetary memory and the countless ways ancient catastrophes still haunt modern civilization. He explores evidence of advanced ancient technology, anomalous ancient maps, extraterrestrial influence, time travel, crystal science, and the true age of the Sphinx. He examines evidence of Atlantis in the Bible and ancient Armageddon, the Stone Age high-tech found at Göbekli Tepe, the truth of Rapa Nui, that's Easter Island, and Zebek Tepe, monuments of Egypt, and mysteries of the Gulf of Cambrai, and what lies beneath the ice of Antarctica. He looks at extinction events, Earth's connection with Mars, and how our DNA reveals that humanity has had enough time to evolve civilization and lose it more than once. Exploring the advanced esoteric and spiritual knowledge of the ancients, he shows that the search for Atlantis and other lost worlds reflects the search for the lost soul of humanity. Drawing upon Velikovsky's notion of a species-wise amnesia caused by the trauma of losing an entire civilization, he reveals how the virtual ruins of a lost history are buried deep in our collective unconsciousness, constantly tugging at our awareness. As he reveals, by overcoming the great forgetting, humanity can find its way out of the technical advancement, out of the haunted labyrinth in which we find ourselves lost today, and rediscover the heights of spiritual and technological advancement of our ancient ancestors. For over a quarter century, he was the author and publisher of Atlantis Rising magazine. He's the author and editor of several books, including Forbidden History and Forbidden Science, and the writer, producer, and narrator of several documentary films, including Technologies of the Gods, Clash of the Geniuses, and the Atlantis Convention. He is an amazing researcher, and he has put forth a tremendous amount of wisdom and knowledge that will hopefully trigger you into wanting to find out more about all of these aspects and concepts. The book, again, is Ghosts of Atlantis, and I want to welcome Doug to the show. I'm so glad you're here today, Doug.
Well, thanks, Barbara. Glad to be here.
Well, this book was, I salivated when I saw the topic, and the more I read, the more I realized this is the kind of book you have to read more than once, because it seems that consciously we are looking for certain things, and we sort of have blinders on, and once you've found what you're looking for, then you expand the blinders and realize there were other things there that you want to go back and read again, because there was another aspect here that, you know, you want to look into. So as consciousness evolves and expands, when you've read the book once, if you go back and read it a second time and then a third time, you expand your ability to accept the things that are written there and incorporate it into your memory bank, so to speak. At least that's how it hit me.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'd love to have you out there promoting our book. You definitely have the spirit that we're trying to connect with there, and I appreciate very much your positive presentation of what the book is all about.
Well, in a way, it's saying, remember this, and you know, first of all, you read the book because it says Atlantis, and everybody, you know, knows about Atlantis and wants to know more about it. But once you've read it, then you realize that the fact that it had to have existed before the last ice age, so therefore it opens you up to that possibility that what came before the ice age, you know, where was humanity, where was society, where was our culture, or was it even ours? And so then you read it a second time and you realize that there's so much more here, and then the more you are open to the possibilities, the more you are able to absorb, and then the picture in your head gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and then it's like, why has science not, you know, science knows this, but archaeologists, for some reason, seem to be caught with everything had to have happened and evolved after the last ice age. There's no possibility that anything happened before then, and that's just foolish.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, the picture is a big one. There's a lot of ways you can come at this, which is what I discovered over the years working with Atlantis Rising magazine, is that there's in order to get the complete picture, you really have to be patient with collecting all the different strands and so forth to be able to see how it collectively presents a tapestry that once you can you really need to see the big picture in order to realize what the story is all about.
Well, and that's what, and what I'm finding fascinating is that I buy the fact that there is amnesia, a collective amnesia. It makes perfect sense. And it, what it feels like is that it's sort of like, let me step back a second. I've often felt that science fiction was a way for reality to be put forth as science fiction so people were comfortable with it, so that when it actually evolved and happened, they were comfortable with it. And,
that's one of the themes that we get into in the book by talking about the book by Arthur Miller, A Canticle for Leibowitz, which was a piece of great science fiction, but it basically, you know, carried the very idea we're talking about, showing what would happen in the future after there had been a cataclysmic destruction of our civilization, and what it would be like to try to recover the fragments and pieces of that lost society and put it together. And science fiction, this so-called dystopian science fiction, does a good job of that, and that people can get the picture from those kinds of stories.
Well, my favorite example, of course, is Star Trek, you know, with the doors that open and shut for them, that was so amazing. And now we walk in and out of shopping centers, and that happens with us, and we don't think anything of it. And their tricorders and their scanners, all of those are out there now. And I guess because it was on TV and we thought, isn't that cute, isn't that funny, when it became a part of our reality, the only thing that bothers me slightly is that, so for the last 10,000 years, humanity thinks that they've you know, sprung beyond anything that's ever been here before, and yet there are so many reminders of us, to us, that there were cultures and societies and civilizations that obviously had to be far more technologically advanced than we are. And yet they're still trying to cram it all into the last 10,000 years, and it blows my mind.
There was a book that was out in the 60s by R.J. Bronowski, which you may or may not have read, called The Ascent of Man. And this was kind of the way that we were supposed to look at things. And it showed basically the idea that we began at a particular time about 4,000 years B.C. We invented the wheel about 4,000 years ago. And ever since then, we've been moving forward in great strides. And that's like the party line. That's the view that everybody is supposed to accept. And John West used to talk about the Church of Progress, which is what we're supposed to recognize and give authority to. It's also part of scientism and the idea that the authorities of church and state had this great wisdom, and that whatever they say about the timeline of the ancient past, that's the way it is. But in fact, there's a lot more to it than that, and there's a much bigger story than they're willing to talk about.
Well, scientists have acknowledged the fact that there have been 4 or 5 mass extinctions that have hit the planet, and how gosh, what's the word I'm looking for? How arrogant of us to think that we are the top of the food chain, that you know, society has never gotten any further than we are here today. But the reality is there are signals that another society has gone way beyond where we are, and we just don't know what their technology is. I mean, the Great Pyramid, the cover stones that were on it before it fell off in that earthquake had water lines on it. So the Great Pyramid had been underwater for a great length of time. The Sphinx, again, has, you know, water damage to it. And then you have Göbekli Tepe, and you know, there are so many things that we can't explain. You know, and people, you know, archaeologists keep saying, well, it was an advanced technology, and we will, you know, the tribes or whatever lost the technology and forgot them. And I don't think that's the case. I think that there were these monuments that were there, and as we evolved, we saw these monuments and then used them for whatever purpose we could figure out. But, I mean, in Central America, all of the pyramids and the structures that are there, I mean, that part of the country was never under ice during the Ice Age, and it feels to me that tribes and cultures found them and decided to utilize them. And my thing on my computer decided to talk to me. They just used them. They didn't know what they were for. And
right.
So it's, I mean, to me,
what the Incas found was their inheritance, not their creation.
Right. And what gets me is especially if you look at South America, the steps in most of those structures were not made for human feet. They just weren't. What kind of culture would you know, construct something that massive and make it difficult to get up them? I mean, it doesn't make sense to me. And the other part, of course, are all of the maps that show, among other things, Antarctica as ice-free.
You're talking about the Peary Reis map.
Yeah.
And which was probably part of a much larger map, which Columbus used when he sailed for America, which was there is evidence that he was following that he had what was called a Mappa Mundi or map of the world that was inherited from ancient sources, probably from pieces that were kept in the library at Alexandria. And that the Peary Reis map was a piece of that, which has shown that the coast of Antarctica beneath the ice was known to an ancient culture. And, of course, the maps, the so-called portolans, which were used by sailors in the Middle Ages to find their way from point to point, were contained implicitly information that was anomalous. There is no evidence or no record of how the information that they were following was passed along, how they acquired it. But it's clear that they did have it, and the meaning of those ancient maps is something that we do talk about. In the book, we've got a whole chapter on the subject, and there's a lot of evidence there that that can't be explained by the mainstream.
Well, and you look at the Nazca lines also. I mean, again, something that can only be seen from above, and, you know, they can't explain why or how they were, they kind of figured out how they were created, but not why or how they were able to map it out or grid it out. And some of the depictions are very detailed, and they keep finding more and more of them. So
There's evidence that the map was actually a map of the world, and that was. But of course, that would be totally in contradiction of the mainstream view, the paradigm. It's definitely a paradigm-busting concept that they had the knowledge of the planet as a whole. In fact, we see that over and over again, evidence that there are present in ancient patterns, evidence of a knowledge of a worldwide order, a giant order, and of course, nobody can comprehend that. It's the idea of primitive people holding this kind of understanding of a larger order is something that is him does not compute.
I think I understand. I understand that there is, excuse me, some sort of, hold on.
Sure.
Nothing like choking on air.
There's some resistance to what we're trying to do, Barbara.
I think so. I'd like to go into Velikovsky and the fact that there is an amnesia that culturally we all are a part of, and that we are finally growing out of that amnesia. You want to kind of go into his philosophy and how it applies to us?
Yeah, well, sure. Emmanuel Velikovsky was primarily made a big splash in 1950 with his book Worlds in Collision. And probably no one else over the last 70 years has been more directly linked with the notion of Earth's forgotten history than Velikovsky. He knew Carl Jung and Sigmund Freud and was kind of part of the group there. And he was a psychiatrist as well as an archaeologist. And his ideas on this subject were kind of pulled together into a book called Earth and Amnesia. It was a collection of comments that he had to say on the subject, and it was called Earth and Amnesia. And basically, the idea is that society has lost its memory of its own, of how it evolved, and in that amnesia, you know, we have lost contact with our own identity and with our own soul. Of course, Velikovsky wrote a number of books, and he's considered the father of catastrophism. And the importance of that is that the mainstream view of natural history is that things evolved extremely slowly over thousands of years, and that that's the way we explain the world in which we find ourselves. Natural history of Earth has been punctuated by many events, and of course, Plato tells how.
Hi, I'm here. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, someone. as someone's trying to call me, but I had to decline there. You know, it's funny. I've had two calls in the last few minutes here. People are trying to get my attention right now as we're trying to talk about this subject. But Velikovsky he was looked down on by the establishment, but he's really a brilliant scholar and produced tremendous evidence. And we talk about that in the book. And he was talking about his, I think his chronology was a little bit different than we look at today. Primarily, he thought that perhaps he was looking at biblical history and biblical events like the flood of Noah and so forth, and trying, and he was associating them with a period of about 3000 BC or 4000 BC, and looking at that as looking at these biblical events as evidence of this the trauma that we lost touch with, and that basically I think the point there is that really Plato was much more accurate, and Plato, of course, tells how the priest that spoke to Solon in Egypt basically tell him that that civilization experienced many interruptions and destructions.
Absolutely.
Destruction of fire, destruction of flood, and so forth. And this, of course, fits right in with what Velikovsky was trying to say, even though Velikovsky was looking at a much more recent, was thinking in terms of a much more recent date. But I think that Velikovsky's theory, if you combine that with Plato's ideas, you start to get the real picture.
Yeah, I agree. Because even in one of the tombs, I think it's on the Giza Plateau or close to it, they literally have the stars reversed so that it is, and nobody makes that kind of mistake on purpose. So that obviously they're coming to the understanding that sometimes the poles of the Earth do shift, so the skies will be different. And so we've gone through a lot of different evolutions of the planet doing what's normal for the planet and yet very abnormal for humanity. And I think that the fact that because these strange things happened and we can't explain them and we don't have any myths or stories or histories because everything was wiped clean just about, trying to reconstruct came before that last ice age, to me is absolutely fascinating. And in my belief system, at least, I really believe that the pyramids came before the last ice age. And sure, probably a lot of the structures in South America and whatever Antarctica holds for us, it seems to me, is still there to be discovered. And it's sort of like, it feels to me as though people are very reluctant to admit to the fact that we are still climbing out of being primitive and coming into a time when we can use technology. But unfortunately, our culture today, anyhow, anytime there's a new invention or whatever, they immediately weaponize it. So the chances are that at some point in time, we may wipe ourselves out again to start again, maybe as primitive or single cells. Who knows? But we don't seem to be doing a very good job of evolving into a more spiritual aspect of creation. And I think that's where past civilizations have fallen apart as well.
Yeah, I think you're intuitively getting the picture. It's it's extremely difficult to state this in terms that are understandable to the materialist authority structure that we find, because there's this and this particular worldview is very dismissive of a more intuitive kind of awareness. But I think that the fact is that the intuitive view of things ends up being much more real than the so-called objective view that that dominates. I think what we tried to do in the book is just by looking at a lot of data points, I mean, that people don't ordinarily think of, and then you're able to see the picture. And I think that, to me, I think reincarnation is a very important part of it. In fact, that's what gives us the memory of a prior lifetime. That's what makes it so important to us to look at these subjects, because the fact is that we're the same people who went through whatever we went through on Atlantis, and we're in jeopardy of going through the same thing again. And that, of course, is the reason why this subject is an important one. Vilikovsky and a lot of the people who explore this kind of thing don't want to look at that in particular, and it's difficult for them to our culture does not have a place for reincarnation, for recognizing that we are influenced by experiences that we had in a prior lifetime, and it seems to be kind of airy fairy, and it's not taken. People don't want to take that seriously, but in fact, it's a very serious thing, and it's the one thing that ties together the elements that we're trying to put together here. And we do talk about that in the book. We don't any hard assumptions there, and we just present some evidence that explains how this kind of thing could be, and there's certainly plenty of it.
Well, you know, when you look at history and what has been done with the human form that we're in right now, the potential for us to do amazing things with energy is there, and yet not tapped into and literally poo-pooed by so many people. It's ridiculous, and yet there are people today that are working with energy in new and different ways. I mean, the best example I've got is the Coral Castle in Florida, where the man moved these huge boulders with no tools, with no lifts, with no machinery, and he had to have done it energetically.
They weren't just boulders; they were, walls and large structures that were weighing many tons that he positioned without no one knows how he did it.
It had to be energetically. He wasn't having little people coming out of the ground and doing them. It had to be energy. And when you look at, avatars through time have utilized energy in many different ways that have been reported in the Bible and in other places as well, so that we are capable of much more than we're utilizing at this point in time. And unfortunately, the intellectual side of society has so much, they'd rather create technology to do it than to utilize the energy we have within us, which blows my mind.
Yeah, I think it gets down to there's the split between the objective, rational, numerical side of ourselves and the intuitive side, which, and they're represented by the different hemispheres of the brain. And basically, putting those two halves back together again is our challenge. And that's part of the result of the amnesia that we're talking about, is that there's this great split or schism between these two different methods of awareness. I've often used the idea that this is not something that comes up in the book, but the idea is that, you know, you have two eyes. Both eyes see a two-dimensional world, but when you put them together, a third dimension, a dimension of depth, emerges. And this is possible because of the union of two different spheres of awareness. And in terms of the brain, which is really, I don't believe that consciousness comes from the brain, but the brain is a kind of a valve, reducing valve, where consciousness, which consciousness is able to use and to come through. And you get these two different ways of looking at things, the intuitive and the linear world, and you put them together, and it opens up another dimension of experience, which was something not previous, was not anticipated by those who pursue this. And I think that that's the potential. The fruit of the union of those two different worlds, and that's what we should be seeking. And the fact that we've lost track of that is one of the reasons we're in so much trouble right now.
Yeah, my philosophy, and it's just mine personally. I think it is. Is that, you know, our body is in many ways an avatar. Our brains are a motherboard, and the spirit works through those things to manifest within the physical reality. And so that what we've got here is, and you know, like I said before, Plato didn't write science fiction. He was a philosopher. And so what he was giving us was hints of what came before we came. And I think that you see that.
It was more than hints. He provided a lot of detail, a lot of evidence, a lot of detail, which was not just, as you say, it was not just science fiction.
And you know, what gets to me is, I would think, and you know, I would like to believe that any culture that was that advanced probably saw destruction coming and tried to leave signs and signals for the future, you know, to grab onto when they got to evolve to a point where they could understand and utilize the information. And I think we're getting there, but I don't think we're all the way there. I'm sure that there are signals that are all over the place. Look at Göbekli Tepe. That was buried on purpose for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And when you take a limited consciousness and try to explain it, it doesn't work. So you have to say, okay, there's more to this than we're seeing. And I mean, some of the explanations for some of the edifices that are around the world are just humorous. Look at the Great Pyramid. Look at the Sphinx. I mean, how do you date the Sphinx? I mean, come on, it was buried in sand and it has water damage to it. How can you say it's only as old as you say it is? You just can't.
Mm-hmm. Right. You have to think bigger. And that, of course, is one of the main points of our book, is that the sphere of the represented by Atlantis is a much larger thought than people are willing to comprehend. They only want to think of it as a kind of a cartoon. They don't want to see it as a profound structure that exists on a, you know, that exists in our consciousness and our memory on an unconscious level, and that it's influencing us to move in a particular direction. And it's, if you really want to understand why we do what we do and some of the strange things that we do, then you've got to look at the history of our experience in Atlantis and elsewhere.
Well, look at even, this is not in the book, but the element of the Bosnian pyramids. Now, they are supposedly 40,000 years old, which takes us beyond the last ice age. And it does feel like whoever or whatever that civilization was did try to leave us hints and to leave us messages about what happened. And I don't know if the Bible, you know, I don't know if the Bible really has any information in it or not, but there are hints that does explain stuff. But it's a matter of people having the willingness to accept the fact that there was a culture, a civilization here that predates that flood and that was farther advanced than we are today. And, you know, did they go off planet when this happened? Or were they actually, you know, destroyed? How, you know, what happened? Where did, you know, where did they go? And if so, if they went somewhere, how'd they get there?
Yeah. Well, there's certainly, you're pointing out the main theme of the book, which is that there's plenty of evidence for the existence of a prior advanced civilization that we are intimately connected with, but which we have forgotten and which we don't want to think about, because thinking about is painful. It reminds us, you know, of mistakes that we made, and reminds us of what our responsibility is now that we are awakening to our greater identity. And that as we do so, we've got to modify our behavior so that we, like they say, the first rule of when you find yourself in a hole, the first rule is stop digging. And that's how. If we're going to do that, then we've got to alter our behavior. If we're going to figure out what's going on. Only thing is, I mean, all of these ideas, if you look at them outside of the evidence, it may sound like it's just another form of do-goodism, and you don't have to really think about it. But we've got a lot more in the book that is hard to ignore. And that's what, of course, is what you're motivated by here.
Yeah, it just, you know, when you think of Zeptepi and Rapa Nui, and, you know, it's our species, somebody survived that cataclysm, and we went back to the Stone Age for sure. But then you know, we evolved again, and it's almost as though there is a reluctance to wrap ourselves around our history. And I think what bothers me so greatly is that we're making such great attempts to go to other planets and other places and things like that, and yet the Earth is a mess. And why don't we take care of our home first? And then reach for the stars. It doesn't make sense to me. And it's not that I'm not, you know, into space travel, and I believe in interdimensional travel, and I believe in reincarnation, and I believe there are other species out there. But who would want to be in contact with what we are right today because we are so barbaric and so warlike, how could they even think that we could be peaceful, loving, and sharing? I mean, seriously.
Well, the fundamental problem, in my view, is a deep psychological problem. We behave the way we do because we don't know who we are, and there's a split between our true identity and what we're asked to accept, what we're trained for, and therefore to identify with the self that we're given to identify with, it's like putting your foot in a shoe that doesn't fit, and it's painful. Being able to identify the proper source, or you know, of who we are, and this is it's a question of origins, and because we don't look at this respectfully, and because we're trying to dodge the implications of it all, and the implications, of course, can be very disturbing. And that's what we've been dealing with for thousands of years, and in that process we have constructed this synthetic concept of self, and basically it doesn't work. And trying to wear the shoes that we're given to wear is quite painful, and so we're basically trying to we're motivated to throw it off and to try to come up with something that fits better, and that of course is a very difficult proposition. I think people do this because they don't have the picture. And if you give them the picture, then they can make those kinds of adjustments more successfully.
Well, if indeed we are coming from a time of fear, and I would think that a cataclysm that would wipe out most of the planet would be terrifying, and if we are inclined, if that trigger is in our consciousness, and we are constantly feeling that our survival is important, so that we are struggling to, you know, protect ourselves, then I can understand why looking for a source of civilization that came before the last ice age, or maybe even before then, because if we've had at least, you know, four or five mass destructions, it's happened a number of times. And each time we've climbed out of the, you know, we've come from single cell and we've evolved again, and so here we are. But society as a whole has this fear trigger, and it's a matter of, with everything that's going on the planet at this time, there's that fear again, and to be able to say, well, wait a minute, we came from peaceful, loving, compassionate, spiritual entities that either screwed up or there was a planetary catastrophe that they had no control over, and whatever happened, humanity was shoved back into a primitive stage once more. And as we climb out, we're afraid that will happen again, so that rather than going forward into a more I don't want to make it woo-woo sounding, but a more spiritual phase of life and experience, we be, we we become primitive once more and we begin to struggle for survival. And by struggling for survival, we cut off that part of ourselves.
Yeah, that's the danger that we face. And, you know, the idea that's presented from the mainstream, and I mentioned it earlier, this idea of that the history of human experience on Earth is a history of gradual change over time, and loses sight of the fact that things that there were these catastrophic events that really have interfered with our development, and that so catastrophism, as it's called, is something that we have to take into account. And things have happened in a very relatively short period of time that are usually thought of as occurring over many, many thousands of years. But in fact, it's all telescoped down into a relatively short experience. Mm-hmm. And that is something that is a very – the idea was there's a strong visceral rejection of anything that appears to be in the Bible. This is, and of course, I think that there's a lot of the so-called Bible thumpers that were pushing their particular point of view, and that then along came, Darwin and and a whole scientific way of looking at things, which replaced the notion that was that prevailed previously, with this idea that don't worry about it; it's all very slow and very gradual over a period of time. And the truth is actually a combination of both things. There is a gradual evolutionary process that is unfolding, no doubt about it, and there's plenty of evidence for it. But there's also evidence of extraordinary events that over and over again brought things to a shattering conclusion and forced people to go back to start over again. And that's what we're really looking at. And it usually the argument is presented as a choice between one or the other. You either believe in the gradualist point of view represented by the academic establishment, or you believe, on the other hand, in, divine intervention. And I'm not ruling out divine intervention. Don't misunderstand me on that. I'm just saying that I don't believe that's the way it works, that's the way it happens, because I think basically we're put into a world where we're expected to learn from our experiences, and we're expected to learn how to navigate our way through these learning experiences that we have, and it's a very slow process, but things can be interrupted by events of an extraordinary magnitude and we have the memory of experiences like that, and it's very scary, the thought of having to go through that again. But in fact, that's what we risk by failing to come to grips with what's actually going on and the requirements that are there for basically trying to guide us to a more successful outcome.
Well, humanity is, I mean, you know, there are all sorts of projects that are going on where they're hiding, not hiding, but they're burying or secreting DNA of animals and people and species of whatever, so that if the Earth is wiped out again, that you know, you can recreate everything that's here. Of course, I know they're storing all of this in many places. I think Antarctica is one place, but I'm wondering if they put the owner's manual there, and I wonder if this has happened before, where society has become so intelligent to realize that it can be destroyed in a heartbeat, so that it hides material and the potential for recreating the world. But
there,
then
it's kind
the
of
handbook
like the story
was
of the, like the story of the Ark of Noah, is what you're basically describing, and. There is, and that, of course, is there are various projects to basically gather together the seeds of a new order from the dying world in which we live, and to assemble them into a form that they can be reconstructed by a future
survivors.
World that. That are the survivors of the world in which we live presently.
Yeah, there was a science fiction movie called, and this goes way back. I date myself. Called Silent Running.
Sure.
That had a spaceship out there that had all of the material to create a new world on it, and. That it was traveling through space and time to find a place where, you know, our life and our species could regenerate again. I mean, your book just, you know, it triggers so much memory of, okay, so we've got all of this material, we've got this the story of what could happen. But they don't really tell you how do you avoid it happening again. So, you know, that is a bit of a dilemma. Once you accept the fact that, okay, there was this civilization, it was destroyed by some way. And so here we are again, trying to do better each time, I would hope. And yet we seem frozen in fear.
Yes, and that's true. And I think that we have been presented with, you might say, a path
mm-hmm.
to follow to our to recover from the circumstances in which we find ourselves, and. I mean, it's implicit in, frankly, I think it's implicit in all of the great religions, East and West, which is, you know, which is telling us over and over again where we came from, and what it is that is expected of us in terms of responsible behavior that would guide us out of the present impasse, and I
mm-hmm.
think that for someone who takes these ideas seriously, when you run into the great teachings of the great teachers of East and West, you find that they indeed were offering exactly the kind of prescription that we need to basically gather learn to behave as we need to behave, and the practices that we can use to pull it together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you find that it's the core of Christianity. It's the core of Buddhism. It's the core of Hinduism. It's the core of every great religion. If from, and I don't mean to leave anybody out, as a and to therefore to suggest that that there's that it's not present in any of these. It's present in all of them. And
well, yeah, the foundation of all of them is the Golden Rule. That's where it all starts.
And that's true, and it goes, and the relationship between them is profound, and it shows clearly. As the more you look at it, you can see how, and all roads lead to Rome. They used to say, you can see the parallel. Of the teachings between different schools, and how that they were representing an understanding of this. I mean, a lot of the really esoteric teachings, and people like, say, in something like Theosophy, for example, and there are other examples of this, they're basically, this is the message. That all of the great teachers were saying the same thing, and that you know, people ignore these things, but they do at their peril.
It's not religious dogma; it's spiritual philosophy that appears the way.
It's spiritual science. This is the
I'll accept that.
It's learning about cause and effect. It's learning about what it is that it may seem like it's a simple thing, but if you're thinking about individual responsibility, and you're looking at you cannot enter into certain kinds of behavior, because if you do so, you'll not only destroy yourself, but you'll destroy the world in which you find yourself. And some of this seems very simple, but it's true. And you can't ignore it.
And, you know, I think that you know, that old adage of, you know, if you don't pay attention to history, you're going to repeat it. I think we've done it a number of times.
Absolutely. And that's the...
And happily, very happily, we seem to be able to go back from scratch and start again. And each time, I would hope we get further and further.
Yeah.
Do you have any opinions as to the purpose and the meaning of Göbekli Tepe?
Well, I kind of think that the survivors of the earlier world that was destroyed were basically involved in an effort to try to relaunch some of the basic activities of civilization that needed to be present. Mostly, I think, probably maybe farming, and and to teach people how to grow things and to do things in a way that could be successful. And that's just an opinion. I mean, I don't have. I think that there was something like that was going on. I've heard Graham Hancock talk about that people were being pulled together to launch the new order that was going to come, and guided by the survivors of the world that had been destroyed. Enough time had passed, apparently, that some of these things could be attempted again. And I think that in many cases, I think that when you look at there were experiments to see what people could understand and trying to get them to attempt some things, and maybe they got off the track, and maybe they didn't fully get the message, and they were attempting things, and it basically the effort had to be shut down. I think that there have been many, many such episodes. I mean, I think that a lot of the talk about the Anunnaki and so forth is really based on the idea that, okay, you have advanced beings attempting various forms of various experiments, and that they were basically, some of them got off the track and the plug had to be pulled. And they kept attempting all kinds of such things. I think the founding of the United States was an experiment, a divine experiment, if you will, at that where a lot of things were brought together and a lot of things became possible that weren't that hadn't been successfully done before. And so that was one that worked. And I think there have been many such attempts to pull things back together. And I think it's still going on. I think there's, even with all the bad stuff that's happening, I think that there are enlightened efforts going on in other dimensions to basically try to get humanity back on track again. And
agree with you.
And I think I think there are probably many surprises in store in terms of the way things actually unfold. Things don't have to be quite as dire as they appear to be right now. And so I'm hopeful the ship can be righted.
I agree with you. I think that first of all, the Bosnian pyramids, one of the, are you familiar with them at all?
Yeah, I know the, I personally am not convinced that that's a real thing, things like that are out there for sure.
Well, there were graphics on one of the boulders inside of it that alluded to the fact that those that created them, I mean, if they indeed were, the element of a Stargate was alluded to. And if you look at the Rendlesham Forest event in Europe, one of the guys that touched the drone that apparently was there was downloaded with binary code, and that referred to that it was a drone that came from the future. And if you look at the crop circles that we experience, the only way I can explain that is interdimensional travel. And so it does feel as though there are forces that are trying to wake us up, remind us, give us information. And in many cases, we just aren't picking up on them. It's sort of like, you know, we're looking at things and we're saying, isn't that pretty? I don't know what it means, but isn't it pretty? And I do think that a lot of the crop circles have meaning to them. I don't know what it is, but
yeah,
I feel that
is certainly something that has to be taken seriously. I think that when it comes down to thinking about whether the influences that are behind the scenes on Earth come from this planet or other planets or other dimensions, I think that all of those things are within the realm of possibility. And I think that the important thing, I think that Earth is a crossroads where you've got influences coming from every conceivable and maybe inconceivable dimension that basically in many of those forces, they collide or they converge here on Earth. And so you get things from many different places. I think you don't really need to, you can understand so much of what's been happening in terms of a kind of esoteric history here on Earth where you have, the fact is that our ancestors achieved much more than we generally realize, and that you don't need to go to other worlds to understand or to get the picture for what's been going on Earth. And
exactly.
I think that
exactly.
That's where a lot of people want to do that. But the fact is that that there's been much more developing and coming from sources here on this planet than we generally give credit for, and frankly, if we can work out our connection with the enlightened order of the past here emerging naturally from the forces on this world, if we can do that, then we will be able to do what we need to do. And we don't, frankly, I'm a little bit concerned about looking at the influences that come from other worlds, because I don't know how much they can be trusted to basically, I suspect that there are dangers there that we have to be looking out for. And I'm not saying that there's not, I think there are efforts to basically draw us into circles that we maybe are out of our depth with, and that we should have our guard up a little bit more. And
When you look at what the Europeans did and what we did to the Native Americans that were here, we assume that we were so much more evolved that we destroyed cultures and societies that were probably even more evolved than we were. And for us to think that wouldn't happen to us is
yeah.
very arrogant, but then humanity has been arrogant in the past, so.
Well, it's at least naive.
Yeah. I mean, when people talk about signing a contract with an alien race, I laugh. Why would an alien race sign a contract with us? All they need to do is take us over. I mean, it doesn't take...
We may be just like a kind of some kind of bug to them, and that they are interested in basically eradicating. You don't know, and the thing is that it could be that, or they could be benign. Who knows? You don't know, and so until you know, you can't take a chance, and that's because to do so is really foolish. But, but the thing is that I think that the guidance that we need is the guidance that we've had all along. And if you want to look at the positive events that have occurred in history, that's how you get to the older brothers and older sisters who basically have been trying to show us the way all along, and they've maintained continuity through because they have overcome the limitations of the physical world, and basically they can maintain continuity through many lifetimes that the rest of us aren't able to maintain because we're not evolved to the point that we can do that. And it's very difficult for us, we struggle to really understand these kinds of influences, but they are there. And if we, this is why if we develop our own hearts to where it's in tune with the divine purposes of life, then we're basically much more receptive to these kinds of to the positive influences that are available to us, and that's what we need to be learning about.
Oh, absolutely! I keep being reminded of the Twilight Zone where the spaceship lands and the space person comes out and helps humanity, and then he has a book that says to serve humanity, and they give the planet lots of technology, and then they say, anybody who wants to come back and, to the planet with us, you have to gain weight in order to, because of the travel, and everybody gains weight to go, and then it turns out his book to serve man is really a cookbook.
That's that's what we have to consider. You don't know.
Absolutely.
You just don't know what any alien forces might be up to. And so we've got to, the example you quote of what happened to the Native American cultures who were exposed to European culture discovered. And some of it was not necessarily, I'm not one of those who thinks that you have to look at, bad motives necessarily. It's that, but bad motives are not the accident. I mean, the diseases that were basically received by the natives is something that I don't think it was intentional, but.
Oh, no, I don't think that was either.
The result was the same. I think there's way too many people trying to make out like it was intentional I think we need to have a much more balanced perspective on these things and look at them with a more common sense and less.
I agree with you on that, but look at also the fact that, the diseases, totally unintentional. However, we felt them primitive and we wanted to convert them to Christianity and we destroyed our spiritual culture. That was there too. So our arrogance.
We talked about that in the book. We talked about that in the book and tried to make the point.
Yeah.
And this is how a lot of the amnesia we're talking about came about, because of the effort to suppress types of knowledge that was not in the interest of certain powers that be.
Oh yeah, the Aztec codices. There's so much, in our arrogance, we have destroyed a lot of material that could have been of great help and benefit to us. So, it should be a process of evolving. And while technologically, we've evolved, but the spiritual aspect of it hasn't been there. And so we're looking for a balance, hopefully, and with that balance will come an opening. It's almost like we have a governor on our consciousness as far as how much we can embrace. And once we get to a place where we can embrace the fact that, we have destroyed ourselves a couple of times.
No, you're right. There's a direct connection between the the inner truth that we can tolerate and what we can actually manifest in the outer world. In terms of, in other words, you have to have reached a certain level of self-awareness before you can successfully generate a positive outcome in the in your creations in the outer world. And so that's one of the reasons why we have to master our spiritual identity. And that's really the challenge.
And you know, I do think that there are certainly more people out there today than there ever have been before, who are questioning, are stretching, are looking for answers. And you know, they may not be in government, but they're there. And I think at some point, it's going to sort of be more of a global movement or understanding. Today, tomorrow, I don't think so. But the fact that you and I can even talk about this is I think an amazing jump forward. 30 years ago, 40 years ago, we couldn't have been on a podcast talking about this. You know, people.
That's true.
You know, one of us would have been burned at the stake, if not both. But you know, we're at a point in time where people are so much more open to this aspect and looking into the possibilities that you know, maybe our culture is older than we thought. Maybe the survivors. I mean, you know, they have the Denisovan. Denisovan.
You're talking about Denisovan.
Yeah, I mean, I always mispronounce that.
Yeah, I mean, they're like the Neanderthals.
Yeah, so it's kind of I do think that people are beginning to understand that Homo sapiens sapiens are a lot older than they thought, and are a lot of the structures on our planet are a lot older than anybody has been able to embrace. And when we get to the point where it's like, you know, oh, this is this is before the flood. This is, you know, so that what was that like? And pre-diluvian, thank you. And you know, maybe that's where the Garden of Eden was.
Sure.
So, you know, that may have been a loving, wonderful culture that didn't survive a global catastrophe that came from, you know, with a colliding with a planet or an asteroid hitting or whatever, so that we have a better grasp of where we came from. I think that's the big thing. Where did we come from? You know, we aren't just 10,000 years old. We're more ancient than that. So, you know, let's be open to the fact that we have come through time and we have come through catastrophes, and the species has survived. So there is a survival instinct in us that is profound, but there's also that fact that I do believe we are searching for our source. Where did we come from?
Yeah. You know, Barbara, I'm going to have to run, but I very much enjoyed our conversation, and it's I appreciate very much your kind words about what we're doing here and about how it and hopefully your audience will get the message there.
Well, we'll put it out there for sure, and hopefully we can talk again at a future date and further explore all of this.
Absolutely, and anybody interested can check out our website at AtlantisRising.com, and also we have a new YouTube channel now where we're putting up a lot of our material, which is the Atlantis Rising Research Group YouTube channel.
Fantastic. I will check that out, and so will everybody else.
That's good.
And
I'll
get this up on our channel, and I will send you a link to this as soon as I get it up. And I thank you again for your time and for all of your efforts. And I think this is just the beginning of another adventure for you.
Well, thank you, Barbara. I very much enjoyed it, and I hope that there will be further chapters in this story.
I'm sure there will be. Thank you again, and have a great one.
Thank you, Barbara. Yeah.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. This will be up on YouTube, and please check out his website. Check out the book. It's Ghosts of Atlantis with J. Douglas Kenyon. It's a fabulous book. You'll want to read it a couple times over for sure. Do join me, on Saturday. Mary Joyce and I are going to be talking about little people, and they're not who you think they are. So I will see you then. Take care now. Have a wonderful day.